Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Your host, Greg, will have smart discussions with friends, experts, and thought leaders on customer experience, transformation, and leadership. Please follow this podcast on your preferred platform. I am sure you will enjoy the next episode with the guest I selected for you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this special episode of the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Why? Because tonight I have David Avring together with me. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm fine, my friend. How are you?
Very well. Super thrilled to kick off this discussion. And for the few people that don't know you, could you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is David Avring, and I am a keynote speaker and a consultant on customer experience. I'm based in Denver, Colorado in America. But I'm fortunate to be able to travel all around the world, all around the globe. I've spoken in over 26 countries. And I love working with companies, audiences, organizations to help them differentiate themselves in a pretty competitive marketplace. It's an interesting time in history. And I think there's some wonderful opportunities for companies to build a strong brand based on more than just the quality of what they produce.
Thank you, David. And if I prepared well for this discussion, I read a lot about you, and you took a twist in your career before COVID, during COVID. Could you explain a bit about that?
Yeah, well, my career for the first 20 plus years was I spoke on marketing and branding. I helped organizations create the words that they use, better craft those words to describe what they do and how they differentiate. And what was interesting was probably over the last, certainly pre-pandemic, probably about the last 7 or 8 years, I began to see, as many have, a remarkable shift in the marketplace. And so much was driven by social media and social proof and our handheld devices. And the reality is, what we say about ourselves is not unimportant, but it's less important today than what other people say about us. And that has become the primary driver of consumer behavior. Back in the 1970s and 80s, it's who had great advertising, who had great marketing or jingles or great logo. And today, we assume that companies are good. Everybody's good. What makes you better? What makes you different? And that's what sort of led the research to my book, Why Customers Leave and How to Win Them Back, about what are those points of friction, those points of frustration that are driving customers away. And so the big shift in my business was from worrying about what we said about ourselves to concentrating on how do we influence what other people say about us. And my business has been very, very strong since. And now I travel the world helping organizations identify those points of friction and ultimately become ridiculously easy to do business with.
Thank you. And you're speaking about several books. If I remember well, you wrote 5 or 6 books, best-selling books, and some of them are already translated in different languages.
Yeah, correct? No, I'm really fortunate that clearly it's a message that resonates around the world because we're all customers. We're all consumers. Even if you own your own business, we're customers of somebody else's business. And so I've been fortunate over the years, and it's always a lot of work, is to write a number of books. If you're looking at the video version, they're strategically located next to my head. And then my new book I'm working on right now, and I'm not sure when you're listening to this podcast, but should be out this spring, and it's called Ridiculously Easy to Do Business With, How to Give Customers What They Want, When, and How They Want It. And so it's all about alignment, about organizations understanding how their customers have changed and our expectations, our preferences for speed and flexibility and convenience. And so it sort of highlights how we traditionally have done business, the way we like to do business, and how our customers really want us to do business. And because we're in such competition with others who do what we do, we have to look for every opportunity to stand out. And today, I think it's ease of process. It's make it really easy to do business with you.
Thank you. Before we start deep diving into all these different topics, how to become ridiculous, easy to do business with, which values drive you in life?
Well, the values that drive my life, I think I would like to believe they're common to many, you know, about family but my work in business, even though I speak in front of thousands of people every month, I see myself as more of a teacher. I think there's a responsibility that all of us have. As we like to say, for those of us who have enjoyed a measure of success, it's important that we send the elevator back down. I think it's important that we lift others up. And all knowledge, all wisdom is built upon what they learned before. You know, even you look at medicine, for example, and doctors coming out of medical school, they only know what they know because generations have taught others and perfected it and got better and taught others as well. And so I see myself as a teacher more than anything else. And so as a messenger and to help people feed their families, help people be smarter in business, help people understand what's not just functional and competent, but today we have to be preferable. We have so many competitors, so many alternatives in terms of how we buy, that what makes us better than others. So my values is to help lift others up, help teach what I know. And of course, my responsibility is to continue to learn through all of that.
Oh, thank you very much. And therefore, super happy that you are going to share with us what you learned throughout your career and also what you're sharing in your latest book,
yeah, How to Become
Ridiculously Easy to Do Business With. How should companies adapt to changing customer expectation over the last 10 years?
Oh, I think companies are always adapting. I think you adapt or you die. And whether you look at nature, it's all the same thing. The challenge is you look, whatever country you're listening to this right now, there were oftentimes beloved brands, companies, products that we love that just didn't survive, right? They were really great when we were young and they're not here anymore. Or they might even been great 2 years ago and they're no longer here. In most cases, the reason why they're gone was not because they were unintelligent, not because they did poor work, was they didn't adapt and change. And so we've got retailers in America that were beloved retailers for 100 years, but they're gone now, not because they did anything wrong. It's because we changed and how we connect and learn and share and buy and pay and deliver. We're able to do so much of that online. And so if you are, by the mere fact of doing business the way you did it 10 years ago, are less convenient than other companies who have adopted digital technologies and easier mechanisms, then you're at a competitive disadvantage. And so I think we always have to be continuing learning and growing. What's interesting for businesses, and this is actually very hard, is that we traditionally had to be one of the best in our category, right? If we wanted to charge a premium price, if we wanted to hold on to our customers, we had to be better than most who do what we do. Today, however, we're being compared against companies that have nothing to do with what we do. We've never seen that before. We have to compete against Amazon or Alibaba or Uber or others as well, because, well, what do you mean you don't know where my order is? I look at my Uber app. I see here's his car. He's turning left on this street. Here's what he looks like. Here's his rating. We can learn from so many other industries about making the path easy, eliminating friction in that process. And so I think it's really important for organizations to be very clear on their target market and then ask the question, where do they get their information? What are they used to buying and how? Where do they recreate and congregate and dine? And are we where they are? And so it's a constant effort to make sure that we're well aligned with their expectations, that we deliver in a way that they want and they prefer.
I really like what you're saying, because in my corporate job, I'm working for an hospital and patients are telling us, but in Amazon, we can do this and that. Why we can't do that? And when they are staying with us longer, they are selling us with Ritz-Carlton or with Hilton, we are receiving this service.
Why? Right.
Why are we not able to deliver that? We are not a five-star hotel. Yes, but right. This is the expectation.
But those kind of answers don't work anymore.
Exactly.
You can say, yes. Yeah, well, we're not Amazon. Well, that's why they get so much more business. Exactly. And it's hard. I mean, I will be clear. It is a great time to be a consumer. It's a great time to be a customer or a client or a patient. It's a tough time to be in business. But those who are strong and those who are resolute in their intention to future-proof their business and their business model, listen to those voices. Listen to those complaints. Do what you can. You don't have to do everything, but you have to do some things. And you have to be, you can't be hard to work with, or people will look for alternatives.
Exactly. And you mentioned something, being future-proofed, being ready for the future. What are your top strategies for brands to stand out and connect with their customers?
It's beyond competence. You know, when you hear a company talk about their quality and commitment and caring and trust, and it's about our people, that's competence. That just means you're good at what you do. Today, even excellence in business is not really a competitive advantage because everybody's good. I mean, you have to be good. But today, excellence is the entry fee. You better be good. I think the way we stand out is by finding ways to be preferable, not just good, not just competent, but better than others who do what you do in some way. And it has to be tangible. It has to be real. I talk to so many business leaders when I speak and consult, and I'll ask them why are you a better choice? And they'll say things like, because of the people. I said, well, your competitors have people. Yeah, but not our people. I said, but it's not convincing. Or they'll say, because for us, it's about quality. You don't think your competitors are about quality? And so they get so enamored with their own messages. I said, tell me what you do that others don't. And I oftentimes get a long list of the same things, right? It's our people. We actually care about what we do, and we care about our customers. I said, it's important. You should care about your customers, but that's not believable from a marketing perspective. I think the key is legitimate ways and highlighting legitimate ways to stand out. If we can get it from you twice as fast as from someone else, there's a great competitive advantage, right? If we can reorder on the app without having to call and talk to somebody or yelling in your phone, real person, agent, real person, right? I mean, why are we yelling into our phones? Because companies are making it difficult to find a real person. You go to a website today and there's no phone number, like anywhere. It's because they made a conscious decision that they will not let their customers call them. It's arrogant. And so I think the real opportunity to answer your question is, as long as quality is always a main source of attention, then we have to shift our focus to how do we help our people, our customers, get what they want faster? How can we make it less inconvenient for them? And how do we become preferable? I think that's the key. We're in a time when everybody's good. And even if you're just sometimes good enough, at a better price point is a better choice for some people. You can't be bad anymore. You can't fall short, because the world will find out pretty easily through Yelp or Rotten Tomatoes or something else. And so we've got to be clear on the quality of what we do, but we need to promote what's different.
Thank you, David. And you said that it's important that companies are preferable, that the preference is for one company and then customer will come back. Perhaps do you have a personal example that you can or you want to share, your experience that you had in the last few weeks, few months, that you say that's an experience that stand out for me and there I want to go again?
Yeah, boy, that's a hard one, because there's so many. What's interesting is what's preferable to me may not be for someone else. Some people might prioritize choices. Some might prioritize flexibility or speed or convenience. And that's the hard part about being in business, is that when we look at an omni-channel approach, no matter how somebody wants to communicate with us, give them that choice. If they want to do it by text or by phone or by, right? But it's the same thing about paying, and how easy is it to pay you? I've got clients sometimes will say, can I pay you by Venmo, or can I pay you by Stripe or PayPal? And the answer is yes, of course you can. They're trying to pay me. What's frustrating is when you get companies who restrict and say, no, you have to do business with us the way we want you to do business with it. I'll give you an example of one that was really frustrating. I was driving through a hamburger place here in America. It's called Wendy's. It's like a McDonald's. And I saw a sign that said two breakfast sandwiches for $2 US. And I get to the front of the line and nobody else was in line. It was like at the end of breakfast. And I said, I'd like to get the two for $2 thing. And they said, no, you have to do that through the app on your mobile phone. And I said, well, I don't have the app. And they said, well, you can just pull over and download the app. And I'm like, but I'm already at the window. Can I just get that order? No, you can only order it through the app. I said, no, but I'm talking to you right now. And so I teach this. So I pulled over just to see how it took 10 minutes. I had to pull out my wallet. I had to enter my credit card information. If one of the numbers was wrong, I had to redo it again. And they added friction to my buying process. You know what's really easy? Driving up to the drive-thru window, ordering your food and getting it. But because they wanted to be clever or have their app when they wanted to capture my information and my credit card, and they made my experience bad so they could get what they wanted. It's one of the things that I'm talking about in my new book, about that one of the chapters is to make it ridiculously easy to try before you buy, right? A lot of people have free trial or free 30 days free, but you can't get the free unless you give them your credit card number. And I've got new statistics. I don't have them in front of me right now. The vast majority of people will abandon that sign up process right at that point because it was supposed to be free. Now they have my credit card information. They're going to start billing me. Now, I understand why the company wants that, right? But they also have to realize that what they really want is people to try their product, and they're driving them away by being difficult to work with. And so I think one of the things we have to find is that balance. There's so many companies now that don't want to give you the price until they talk to you. We were moving, we downsized, we were new empty nesters, and we had to replace a huge window. We called companies to get a quick price quote. We had all the dimensions, and the biggest companies wouldn't give us one. We have to come out to your home because, of course, it's going to be expensive and they want to make sure, and that's their process. And they said, no, but I don't want you to come to my home. I just want to get a price. Well, we can't give you. I said, well, then you're no longer even one of my candidates. And they were saying, okay. And that's fine. I mean, you have the right to turn away business if you want. But my contention is, if other people are willing to do it, you better be easier to work with than they are. And so many companies stay on their, they harp on their policies, but that's our policy. Okay, then you don't get my business. You know, and leaders have the right. You can make whatever choice you want. You know, I was talking to a dental practice, dentistry. And they have so many of their customers they lose because they don't do any evenings or weekends because they want balance in life. And I said, I get that. But the average lifetime value of a family in dentistry is over $100,000 US. And so you couldn't find one, you know, weeknight a week and have everybody shift and, right? Then at least, but you're not available, that's fine. And you lose that business. So it's an interesting balance right now.
I need to laugh because you mentioned a dentist and you said evenings or weekends. Where I'm living in Switzerland, and there is a federal policy, as you said, that they are not allowed to work in the evening and they are not allowed to work during the weekend. But that's exactly the point in time where when I would have time to go.
When people would have available, right? They come home. Exactly. They've got to feed their children. They got to do their homework. Okay. And then when do we, if we're working during the day, how do we access services? So it's a bigger conversation, but it's also a competitive advantage for the companies that are ridiculously easy to do business with. I tell my audiences and my clients all the time, we have to find a way to say yes more often. And it doesn't mean that we do things that are not profitable, but look back at our business model and we say no to a lot of things that we could easily say yes. And sometimes we use the excuse of saying, well, if we do it for you, we have to do it for everybody. And I tell them, no, you don't. You just do it for whoever asks, because most people won't ask. I was leaving a hotel. I needed to do a late checkout. And they said, we're not doing any late checkouts because we have a conference coming in. Well, I was heading out the door to go speak for a group and I couldn't get back by noon. And they said, sorry, we can't. And they said they were going to, if I came back after noon, they were going to charge me for a second day. And the reality is, it's pretty easy to just, you know, how many people are going to ask for a late checkout? 4 or 5, whatever. Just please your customers, if you can. Please your customers.
I love it. And you're mentioning also a lot of example with using pair with human and so on. How do you see all the discussion around balancing digital and human interaction?
It's a great question. And it's a question that many companies are struggling with right now. And I think they're making the wrong decisions. And I remind leaders and organizations that your technology, maybe it's a chatbot or something like that. Your technology is not there so you don't have to talk to your customers. We use technology to offload basic issues, easy answers, so that you have time to talk to the customers who really need it. There are plenty of millennials and young people who can do things on the app, and that's great. But you don't deploy technology so that you don't have to talk to your customers. You deploy it so that you have the time to talk to the people who really need it. Because there's a certain category of people. And when you frustrate them even more because they're trying to get an information, and then they're trying to deal with a chat bot, and then they can't understand them. My contention is when communication is restricted or delayed, problems escalate quickly. Help people get what they want quickly, help them resolve issues quickly, help them complain quickly so that you can address it. Because when time passes, when frustration grows, they don't just tell their friends, they tell everybody, everybody. And the internet is forever. And so we have to move upstream. We have to be more agreeable. Technology is great. I'm working with a company right now that use technology to sort of triage and send people to the right place, but all the communication is by humans. It's brilliant. So I think it's still an experiment for some companies. And I think they'll learn that the more they extract humans and force us to use technology, even when we don't, we're going to start seeing companies lose customers. And then they'll finally get the message.
And I think at the end, it's always also a decision from the leadership. And therefore, which advice would you give to the leaders of companies, to the CX leaders in companies? Which is the best advice that you would give them?
I think two things. One is for them to be lifelong learners themselves. What worked 5 years ago doesn't necessarily work now. And so they have to be open to new alternative solutions. And the second one is, I think from a leadership perspective, when it comes to their team, their employees, their staff, I think we need to help our employees understand the importance of happy customers. I think everybody's working hard, but some people feel a little bit disconnected. If they're working a customer service line and they're dealing with frustrated people all day, help them understand why. Help them understand what I do. I go into organizations and say, here's what's changing in your customers and your clients. Here's why they are the way they are. I ask audiences, I say, has anybody noticed that your customers are a little more impatient, a little more demanding? And of course, they all nod their heads. Well, here's why. So I think for leaders to be able to sort of pull back the curtain, as we say, show their employees, here's how we make money. Here's the lifetime value of a customer. Here's what happens when somebody's not pleased. Here's what happens in terms of our revenue and our ability to hire people and keep them. Help them understand how we do business and why, and how important their position is. They may see themselves in a cubicle and I just got to talk to angry people all day. No, you're an incredibly important part of this business. And here's why. When somebody leaves angry, here's what happens. When we're able to solve their problems and stay with them, here's what happens. We can do all the training we want, but they have to understand why it's important to them, why it's important to their customers and others as well. So I think leadership has such an important role. Don't just teach them the functions of their job, teach them the why of their job and how it fits into what everybody else is doing as well.
I really like that. And I think from this discussion, it's come out that it's important also for companies to be proactive and understanding customer and speaking with customer. Perhaps do you have a good example that you experienced in the last few weeks, months that you can share where a company came back proactively to you?
Oh, came back proactively to me. It's kind of sad when those are few and far between. I was trying to remember who I was calling. It was some kind of technical support. Oh, it was something for my son at his university because he's overseas. We had talked about that before. And what I really liked was someone who said to me, because I was frustrated. I was dealing with two different countries and online forums and who got it, who didn't. And she said, give me your number. I will get back to you. I will not leave you. I promise I'll get back to you. And she did and said, here's where it is. You need to click on here and do this form. Here's what they didn't get. So often in many of the studies, and I know you know this, many of the studies show one of the biggest frustrations is when we are transferred again and again and again. And so as we as leaders teach our people, own the problem, stay with somebody till the end. If you go to the grocery store and you ask somebody where the breakfast cereal is and they can point, or they can take you there and show you. If you say, I'm frustrated with something, guide your people, be hand in hand with them and resolve problems. Owning problems is a huge benefit. And I was just really grateful. It's just an example of somebody who, after having called many people, someone says, I'm sorry you went through all of this. I promise I will not leave you until it's done. And you know what? I hung up the phone and I was able to breathe again because I had confidence. And the great news was she followed up with that. It's when we quote policy and we transfer to somebody else, it just problems escalate. And today, everybody has a bullhorn that reaches around the world. We grew up with what we used to call guest relations philosophy, and everybody in business has heard some version of this. And it goes like this. The average person with a positive experience tells two or three people, but somebody with a negative experience tells 10, right? Something like that. Today, none of that is true. Today, we tell thousands. Today, potentially, we tell millions. So the ramifications of underperformance, the risk of doing this wrong, is much higher today than it's ever been. The good news is there's no shortage of information and training and books and for us to stay current on what customers are expecting. The challenge is that companies and leaders who really dig their heels in and say, this is the way we do it. Enforcing your customers to do business with you the way you want them to do business. Give them choices, give them options, and say yes more than you do.
And with this positive message, we are coming to an end of this discussion. But in the extra time, I still have three questions for you.
Sure.
The first one, fast forward 10 years from now, what topics are we discussing on this podcast?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I think it's that we can see patterns in history. There is the technology is growing and growing. The things that we're able to take off our plate, that facilitate communication, that facilitate transactions and research and ChatGPT, all of that is growing. But there is an inevitable swinging back of the pendulum towards the humanity. I don't think we'll ever lose technology. I think technology will only grow, but I think we'll learn that we have to consciously find times to meet in person and to connect. And I think one of the things we learned during the pandemic was, yes, we could technologically do conversations like you and I are having right now. We could present to thousands of people around the world virtually. But I think we also learned very quickly what we lost in terms of that connection, the serendipity of the unexpected conversations that happen in the hallways, right? And so I'm really excited and interested to see how we will prioritize human connection and in what way. I did a podcast right before this one for the wine industry, and they were talking about, even during the pandemic, that we would do, you know, dinner with friends over Zoom, but you can't taste something virtually. Right? What's the experience there? So I think 10 years from now, I think we won't even be able to comprehend the technology. But I think as humans, we will prioritize balancing that with a good measure of in-person connection and conversation.
That's great. And I'm looking forward to this future. David, what's the best way to contact you?
Best way to contact me is just look right through my website. It's just my name, davidavrin.com, A-V-R-I-N. And then I'm on all the social media, but in most cases, it's under the real David Avrin, because there's a lot of people try to steal your identity. But yeah, just go to my website at davidavrin.com or Google me. You'll see lots of videos and other insights as well.
And I suggest to the audience to follow David and to buy his books, because these are really great books and you can learn a lot. You get some insight in this 20 minutes of discussion. And please also be ready to buy the next book David is publishing in Springs. I will share all the links and details in the show notes. Please buy these books. And now we are coming to the last question. Is David's golden nugget? It's something that we discussed, or something new to leave to the audience?
The golden nugget to leave the audience. Boy, I don't want this to sound negative. You may be good at what you do, but you haven't created the cure for cancer that tastes like chocolate. You're not that good. We all have to market. We all have to dig deep. I love organizations and leaders who are so proud of the work that they do. And I think that's very important. But recognize your customers have choices. And what may be obvious to you looks like just another choice to somebody who has many good choices to make. Don't just be competent. Don't be overly confident in what you do. Actively highlight what's different. Make it ridiculously easy to do business with you. Be more than just competent. Be preferable.
David, the only thing that I can say is thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, friend.
Sharing all these insights to me and to the audience. David, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And to the audience, I hope that you enjoyed this discussion as much as I did. It's really worth it. Follow David, buy his books. It was a great pleasure to have David on this show. And I hope that you enjoyed this discussion. Thank you very much and bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share the word of mouth.
subscribe it, share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business, we are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you!